You follow the tour guide into the Great Hall. She tells the group about the history of the building and what the Great Hall would have been used for. As the group follow the guide into the next room, you stay behind, looking at the original wooden beams and trying to imagine how it would have looked when it was first built. You feel a cold hand on the back of your neck. You turn to see who it was, and nobody is there. So you start to walk toward the door where the group went into. A woman suddenly appears right in front of you and walks through the door. You open the door and she's gone. None of the group saw her. Welcome to Ghost Tales by the Fireside. I am Clem Dalloway, and this episode is about the history and ghost tales of the medieval manor house in West Bromwich. The house has had numerous sightings of ghosts and has an interesting history. The medieval manor house in West Bromwich was built in the 1270s, after the death of Richard de Offney, Lord of West Bromwich. He left the manor to his two daughters, Sarah, the wife of Walter Devereux, and Margaret, who married Richard de Marnham of Bromwich in 1275. Eventually, the manor was passed on to the Freeman family in the 14th century. And in 1424 was passed on to Alice Freeman, who married William Freebody. He held the manor until his death in 1437. His son, also William, inherited the manor and he was only 10 years old. William's youngest granddaughter, Cecily, held the manor from 1515, age 13. She passed it on to her husband, John Stanley, son of George Stanley, the former High Sheriff of Staffordshire, and Eleanor Dudley Beaumont, widow of Sir Henry Beaumont of Wensbury, and daughter of the first Baron of Dudley. After John's death in 1533, the manor was passed along to many generations of the Stanley family until 1622, when he mortgaged the manor to his cousin, Richard Shelton, and Sir William Hewitt. Richard Shelton became Solicitor General to King Charles I and was also knighted in the same year, 1625. Shelton was pressured to resign as Solicitor General in favour of Edward Littleton and so retired to the manor house in West Bromwich. Richard Shelton died in 1647 and the manor was passed on to his nephew, John Shelton, who died in 1665, and was succeeded by his son, also John Shelton. John was a minor at this time, and his inheritance was spent by his stepfather. By 1713, the manor and estate was put up for sale by Chancery. John died in 1714, and the debt of the estate was unfortunately passed on to his son, Joseph. In 1720, the manor was bought by Sir Samuel Clarke, a very rich merchant from London. The manor stayed with the Clarke family until 1819, when Thomas Clarke died and the property was put up for sale by Chancery again. The Earl of Dartmouth bought the manorial rights and the house in 1823. By 1836, the house was split into separate accommodations and three families occupied the building. By the 1940s, the house was derelict and was due to be demolished, but was saved by the West Bromwich Corporation, when they cleared the slums in 1949. The house has been known by many names over the years, such as the Old Hall, the Hall, and Bromwich Hall. It was named the Manor House in 1961, when Ansell's Brewery took it over and reopened it as a pub and restaurant. It stayed as a pub and restaurant until 2009, when it was returned to the West Bromwich Council, and is now open as a museum run by the Sandwell Museum Service. In the 13th century, two of the sons of Richard and Margaret de Marnham's sons, Bertram and Nicholas, were involved in a dispute after a heavy drinking session with a local lady known as Agnes the Weaver. The following was recorded at the Staffordshire Assizes in 1293. That Nicholas, son of Richard de Marnham, and Bertram, son of Richard, were sitting and drinking together with others at the house of Agnes the Weaver of Bromwich in Bromwich in the dusk of the evening, and contumelious words were used between them. And the said Bartram, who was the younger and humble, out of respect for Nicholas, got up and left the house of Agnes in order to avoid the malice of Nicholas, who was vade malicious. And Nicholas, being irritated at this, got up and followed him with a long knife drawn in his hand. And Bertram ran away between two high hedges as far as the door of Richard de Marnham in that fill. And the door was closed so that he could not enter the house, nor could he climb over the hedges because of their height, and he could not evade Nicholas except by defending himself. In self-defence, he struck Nicholas with his sword on the head and in the breast. This is therefore to be given to the bishop as not guilty. It is possible that Bertram was a member of the clergy, perhaps a priest or a monk. Many people have witnessed the figure of a monk walking outside of the house's chapel area. In the winter in the 1970s, a man went to the manor house for a beer after work. He had two pints of beer and left. As he walked out of the building, he noticed that someone was standing near the path. He approached the silhouetted figure, which gained in detail as he got nearer. He noticed it was a man wearing what looked like a gown, and he asked him if he was okay. The figure walked past him and disappeared as he approached the house. At another time, when the house was a pub, a man who was having trouble at home started going in every night for about a week and heavily drinking. He would talk to the barman, telling him his troubles, and the barman done his job and listened to him. One night, after telling the barman that he was going to divorce his wife, the barman gave him some advice. Straight away, the man left to go home in a jolly mood. He returned the day after to find someone else in place of the barman who he'd been talking to over the last week. He asked the man behind the bar if the other barman was in, as he wanted to thank him for listening to him and for the advice he'd given him the night before. The man beyond the bar asked him to describe the barman. He said he was tall, thin, with a receding hairline, wearing a white shirt and a grey waistcoat, and always smiling. The man beyond the bar said, "You mean Jim? He died years ago, mate, but he does return from time to time for those in need of his reasoning." Many members of staff and customers have heard footsteps all around the building, especially in the main bar, and sometimes they are accompanied by the apparition of a man dressed in medieval clothing or a young girl. One night, when the pub was holding a celebration for Halloween, one of the volunteers was putting her makeup on in the bar mirror. She reported seeing the face of a girl appear in the mirror, so she turned around to see who was behind her. There was no one there. When she turned back to look at the mirror, she saw the girl walking away. Then she turned to look back at her. The house is now a museum, and guided tours are on offer for small groups of people. One day, one of the guides was taking a group around when they went into the small courtyard near to one of the 1960s extensions. She said that she felt someone touch the back of her neck. It wasn't one of the group, as they were all in front of her. They started to move on, and she felt it again, repeatedly, until she said it felt like two hands grabbed both shoulders and pushed down. When her manager saw her, he jokingly asked if she'd seen a ghost. She replied that she hadn't seen one, just merely felt the presence of one. The same experience happened to another guide in the kitchen area. In the 1980s, a group of amateur paranormal investigators held a vigil at the manor. Their main aim was to experiment in recording to see if they could capture any spirit voices and any other sounds that were out of place. While recording, one of the group mentioned that her nose had gone really cold. When they listened back to the recordings, they heard the voice of a little girl saying, "I know that," and then laughed loudly after the woman mentioned her cold nose. They also recorded the sounds of children playing on the lawn around 4 a.m. Children have also been seen on the stairs, along with them giggling and running up and down the stairs. A cat is also seen on a regular basis, with many people saying that they could feel it rub up their legs to look down and see nothing there. Other people have commented to staff on how they love the museum's friendly cat. The museum doesn't have a cat. The ladies' toilets have been subject of much paranormal activity too. Children have been seen walking through, and when using the toilet, people have reported seeing the tips of someone wearing black shoes poking under the door. An old lady wearing medieval clothing and a bearded man have also been seen walking around the house, mainly in the Great Hall. In 2012, a young family visited the house for a guided tour. Their daughter was 6 years old at the time and wandered off into the Great Hall. When her father caught up with her, he asked what she had been doing in there on her own. She said that she followed the old lady. When her father looked around in the Great Hall, a woman dressed in medieval costume walked through another door. He followed her to ask her if it was her that his daughter had followed. He entered the door and followed the lady into the room. As he walked into the room, it was empty. Thank you for listening to Ghost Tales by the Fireside. You can log on to the Facebook page, facebook.com/ghosttalespodcast. You can also find us on Instagram, instagram.com/ghosttalespodcast. This podcast will be out monthly and is available on most podcast platforms. All music, research, writing, production, art, and sound effects are all my own work.